Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth.
This is Peter Mitchell. How are you, Doc?
Rainbow Soul is the Sports and Death is the show. And as we always open up with a prayer. John Coltrane's, Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. Asking you that you have your will and way. Thank you, Lord, for the little things we so lightly take for granted. Blessings forthcoming, all unmerited, unseen, unknown. But more importantly, Lord, let your way be our way. We ask you to bless our family and our friends, our president. And more importantly, Lord, thank you for your darling son Jesus died on the cross, so we may have the right to the tree of life, although you may not be buried by his God. Your God all by yourself. In the name of your daughter, son Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports Death with the Blake, Rainbow Soul, Channel Sports Death with the show. Jamie Harris, the legendary, renowned sports writer for the Amsterdam News, gave me a call. Said, Doc, you got to talk. Doc, you won't believe who I saw. Skeeter Mitchell. Skeeter Mitchell? Yeah, he's Doc. We walk our dogs together, Doc. Hold on, Doc. Puts me on the phone, and there is Skeeter Mitchell. And then Skeeter Mitchell is talking about David Vasquez. And he's talking about David Vasquez. He's talking about Harold Weston Jr. He's talking about my people, my blood, my guys with a whole host of stories. I said, Doc, you know what? Let's see if we can get us a boxing special on here tonight. And with that, I called the crew. Skeeter was just with us. I guess he'll call back. We lost him there for a second. We're going to talk boxing. Jamie Harris, Skeeter Mitchell. Skeeter has some interesting stuff. It reminds me so much when Rooney calls. Doc, I just want to run by you. I know you're the busiest man in the world. I'm not going to take up much of your time. We'll talk at least 2 hours after he says
you
that.
You sure are the busiest man.
You know, and he did that. But without further ado, we're going to introduce Sports In Depth Nation by Rooney, and then we're going to talk to Skeeter Mitchell. Rooney, welcome the world to Sports In Depth.
Thank you, Doc. The Sports In Depth Nation is here. The Sports In Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here via the Blake Radio Network, and the straw that stirs the drink is here. And that is Doc Stanley. Take it away, Doc.
Thanks, Rooney. Hope they're not thinking I'm like Reggie Jackson, came with that great line. Munson thinks he's the store that stirs the drink, but I'm the store that stirs the drink. I thought about Rich the other day. Well, you know, Rich, I was thinking about the other day. I was walking down the block. I said, you know, Reggie was the core of two of the great teams of our generation. The 3 years in a row world champion Oakland A's, him and Joe Rudy and Sal Bando and By the Blue and Blue Moon Odom, Catfish Hunter, and Mike Epstein, Keith Holtzman, managed by Mr. Williams, Dick Williams. And then he comes over to the Yankees. Yankees don't win until Reggie gets there. And then he punctuates that great World Series with the three home runs on three different pitches, three first. I remember my late friend, the great Leroy Neiman, told me his story.
Bert Campaneris.
But, yeah, okay, he's part of that crew, too. Dusty, when I'm doing these African American things, don't be throwing these Latin guys in like that.
I saw, okay? Hey, Doc, that voice sounds dangerously familiar. Oh,
you know,
my.
You know, you know, I mean,
hey,
you know.
Doc.
Hey,
aren't Cubans a little dark also?
You know what's funny, Dusty? It's funny you said that. I remember they had a documentary about the Cuban baseball player who couldn't get here because of all the political things. And this one Cuban guy said, had they allowed the Cuban baseball to play, there'd been no other Latin nationality that would have played. Skeeter, you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you, Doc. Hey, Doc, I want to tell you something. Catfish Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
He comes from Hertford, North Carolina. That's H-E-R-T-F-O-R-D.
Mm-hmm.
That's my mother's hometown.
Really?
And, yes, it is. And he had the biggest.
He's a southerner.
Yeah, that's right. He's a Tar Heel. He had the biggest farm in all of Hertford, North Carolina.
Exactly.
He was a great guy. I remember talking to him one time. Down at Mickey Mantle's, I had an affair where Quaker State was promoting, had a promotion there, and they had four of the legendary figures from sports, from basketball, the great Walt Clyde Frazier, the greatest all-around player I've ever seen as a guard position, day in and day out. Oscar was the best, but the guy that I've seen day in and day out, Walt Clyde Frazier, who's just behind Oscar, Gordie Howe, the great, the Gretzky before Gretzky. And the great, the man who won the first two Super Bowls MVPs, the great Bart Starr. Surprised he had 8 years as backup quarterback. And Catfish Hunter. And we were talking about pitchers and all that sort of stuff. And we talked about how, you know, pitchers had so many complete games and all that stuff. And Catfish said, well, you know, he said, the reason why they had the guys out in the bullpen because they didn't want him in the game in the first place. it was really so cool. But, no, you know, we got a chance. Jamie, he's going to join us. And what happened, Dusty and Rooney? And
yeah.
I hope, Rooney, were you able to catch up with Howard Weston?
No, Doc. Actually, the first lady of boxing, Lady Ace, is indeed on assignment. And I can't see the number.
Oh, keep taking a look at that. I'm Lou Peter myself, who I found out because Harold was the matchmaker. We got a chance, and we're just going to really run with you because I've got Dusty here. He's former Golden Globe champion himself, the Steno Baby Laws. They're going to get a hold of Harold. I'm a little irate at myself. Rooney, every now and then, go back into your file and see if you can find Harold. I know you got him from the top.
I've been looking for him, Doc. I can't find him.
Okay, all
right. I can't find him.
Yeah. Harold,
I might.
Kyle Wilson was a great welterweight.
Tremendous welterweight. The one MSG welterweight championship, the only African American matchmaker in the history of Madison Square Garden. And there's so much truth to the fact that when he left, the God was never saying, Skinner, but we got you here. There's so many great things to talk about. And, you know, you got into boxing. How did it all start for you?
Well, I'll tell you, as a little boy, I was an asthmatic. And the doctor told my mother, he said, you know, if we can get him into some kind of athletic activity, he said, perhaps, you know, he'll grow out of it. Well, now, my first name is a very odd name. My first name is Garizek. Garizek.
Mm-hmm.
And it means devoted. Terrible name, I know. Don't laugh. And I said, you know, I want to do something and become famous so that when people hear that name, they won't laugh. And the only thing I could think of was as an individual sport was boxing. But, you know, here's the kicker, Doc. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
After I started getting a little prowess, a little ink, won the PAL tournament a couple of times, I changed my name from Darizek Mitchell to Machine Gun Skeeter Mitchell.
Machine Gun Skeeter in the house, y'all.
And I've been Skeeter
did
Mitchell.
Did you fight in the PAL?
Yes, yes. Hey, let me tell you something. Do you remember that name, Choo Choo Malave?
Choo Choo Malave?
Yes, yes, yes. He was from the Bronx, I believe.
That's right. Choo Choo Malave and his brother Vinny, they were the first two brothers to ever reach the finals in the Golden Gloves. And they were declared co-champions.
Co-champions, absolutely.
That's right. And later on, Choo Choo Malave went on to become an actor, and he had several roles on Bonnie Miller.
Bonnie Miller.
Well, yeah, I remember reading the story because it was such they liked the name. I think he was a crowd pleaser, and it just fit with that whole scheme of things. And I remember reading about, you know, Choo Choo. I mean, it was a name you hadn't heard of. I mean, Choo Choo Malave, and that was a name. I read an article about him. And in those days, boxing got a lot of ink. I mean, it was still at its apex. And you guys had, it was just a colorful, Justino Baby Lowe's, Choo Choo Malave, Davy Vasquez. We talked about Davy Vasquez, who you were telling me.
From the 139th team, Department of Parks, St. Mary's Park. That was Davy Vasquez, right?
Mm-mm.
Well, Davy Vasquez, you know, I tried to get him on the show this evening. He's a little under the weather. But he promised the very next time that you have a show that he will be on it. He promised that.
That's great. And we're looking to get you guys back here Sunday.
Yeah, David, he also got into acting. if I'm not mistaken. He worked in the first Serpico movie or something like that. He did a lot of bit parts, too.
If
I'm talking about the same guy, David Vasquez, 112 pounder, 118 pounder?
Former sparring partner of mine, Vito Antifumo, former middleweight champion of the world.
Oh, Vito.
Really?
Boy, he could hit. Let me tell you, that guy had a left hook like a mule kick.
Well, and, you know, and Harold said the thing about him, Skeeter, was his ability. He said he knew that Hagler would have a problem with him because Vito had no stamina problem where Marvin did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
Vito was a rough dude.
Yeah, Vito. But you know what? I tell you something about Vito. He has a heart of gold, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He has a heart just as big as his left hook. Believe.
Wow.
And then, you know, don't forget he had a part in Godfather 3, you know?
Yeah, he had a, well, he was another guy, Chucho Malave, David Vasquez, himself, who became actors.
Yeah. And Vito had a pizza parlor right here by my block in Ozone Park here.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, many years ago. In fact, it was called the Champ's Pizza.
Wow.
The Champ, huh?
Yeah. I walked in there and I see this crushed face. I said, man, I know this guy from somewhere. I see his picture with his belt. I said, oh crap! Oh, I was just gonna curse. I forgot it's a family show. I said, oh, hey, Vito! Vito! I says, yeah, man. That's, oh my lord! Yeah, but
you know,
I'll never forget
Marvin Hagler when they were about to have that first fight. Marvin Hagler showed up at the weigh-in with a fly swatter, calling him Vito the Mosquito.
Vito the Mosquito.
Hey, well, you guys realize that Marvin damn near barely got the hell out of England. When he beat the hell out of Alan Minto over there, they barely got him out of there.
I remember that because he was leading the fight against Vito, but in the latter rounds, Vito came on, and in those days, you had to beat the champion. And I remember the first time I seen Hagler, he was the semi-main event on a Friday night where the youngest man ever to win a world championship, the great dragon of boxing because of the Bible, Wilfredo Benitez, who had beaten Kid Bambalé, was fighting, and he was going for his first world title from Palmer Park, Michigan. Sugar Ray Leonard.
My guy.
Hagler and Antifumo was the HBO, which was big then. A lot of people didn't have HBO, and my friend in Manhattan, Anthony Emil Newendam, invited me over to Friday. Hey, man, come and watch the fight Friday night. And it was the first time we had seen, actually, both of them. Well, you know, Vito was a New York product, but the Hagler, close fight, and because Vito had just recently won the title from Minta. I believe. No. Yeah, I think he had taken it from Minta.
Minta.
Yeah, and then somehow Minta got it back, and Marvin, again, took it away from him, but that was the undercard fight. Skeeter, you also talked about people. David Vasquez was Olympic roommate of George Foreman.
That's right, on the 1968 Olympic team. And, you know,
exactly.
Here's what's funny, though. You know, Davey told me how he had just turned 20 years old the same week they were at the Olympics. And they were roommates, and he told George, he said, George, go get me some milk and cookies. Davey Vasquez weighed 118 pounds with rocks in his pocket. Can you imagine him telling Big George? George was a monster. George told him, he said, I'll eat you. You know?
I'll eat you. Oh, wow.
You know,
Finish.
You know, I still remember that famous picture of George holding the little flag, you know. And don't forget, Olympics, you know. That was Tommy Smith and John Carlos Olympics.
Talked about that. It adds such a Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network for our show. It's a special. It's going to be part of two specials this week, boxing special. The great sports writer from the Amsterdam News, Jamie Harris, gave me a call today. And some of the greatest conversation shows ever done are right on the phone. He said, Doc, you can't believe who I ran into today. We walk our dogs at the same time, Skeeter Mitchell. And he said, and you know what? He's a friend of Davey Vasquez. And this is the first two specials Friday night. Sports and Death will be live in New York studios and live on the scene, on the field. And Cincinnati, Ohio, as the New York Jets open their preseason against the Cincinnati Bengals, Sea Wings Raymond will be the guy bringing us all the action. So that's a Friday night special. We want to apologize for some technical problems that happened on Sunday. We also want to say in time, I guess, you know, when she doesn't listen, then I guess we don't come on the air. But our number one listener from Brazil, actually number one listener in the world, Rosie, is on the line. We want to let her know that we're saying hi to her and glad that she's listening again. And also we're glad that her father is finally home, and her and her dad and all her family is in our prayers. Dad was in the hospital for a long time, and he's back. And also, at the same time, we want to have good well wishes out to the First Lady of Television here in New York City, Crystal Hart, who is visiting her dad. And luckily, Dusty, her dad, is feeling a lot better. Lot better. So,
yes,
too,
thank God for
we,
that,
thank,
yeah.
we thank the father of fathers,
yeah,
which is God,
glad
for bringing them. Yeah, both of them doing better. So, Dr. Lee Sports, how are you doing, Rosie? Hello. Say something back to me now. I know you got me on Skype. And it's a special. It was something I looked at it. You know, we did have some problems on Sunday. Time allotment, and we're going to be back again on Friday with a football special live in Cincinnati, Ohio. And so stay tuned for that. We'll be on 9 o'clock again, bringing you the halftime report with Sea Wings, and then we'll stay there and also bring you the on-scene action. The Jets will open their preseason against Cincinnati, and then they'll be back home. And what they started doing, I used to didn't like it when I covered it, because I'd wish they would play each other. And hello, Rosie, how you doing? I wish they would play other teams who you won't see during the course of the season. Same way, like we figure maybe we won't see Kansas City. So they could play Kansas City and the Giants as well. So maybe we won't see Detroit. They'll play Detroit. But it's economically better for both teams. It's a home game for one team and a road game for the other. But for all esoteric purposes, it's two home games. And the media guys is good, too, because we get a chance to catch up with the credentials and get everything straight. Now, Mitch, you talked about so many things, too. And Dusty, I'm so upset.
I wanted to ask Skeeter Mitchell, you know, your name, forgive me, it keeps rolling around my head. And you mentioned guys that I grew up with, that I knew, where did we meet or did we, or what was, you know, did you train in Stillman's like I did or some PAL gym or something? Because Skeeter Mitchell keeps bouncing, and I'm wondering if we met somewhere
I trained in Stillman's. I trained in Gleason. And I remember there was an old PAL gym called Duncan Center in Hell's Kitchen.
Duncan Center, holy God. Yeah, okay, no, go ahead. You're bringing up ancient George Washington names. Go ahead.
Yeah, man, I tell you. And, you know, a person that I met in that gym, and to this very day, we're good friends, and whenever I see him, I yell, I want Eddie Mustafa Muhammad.
Wow.
Eddie Mustafa Muhammad was Eddie Gregory then. But
Skeeter. Eddie the Flame Gregory.
The Flame, that's right.
Eddie the Flame Gregory.
That was his fighting name. Did you ever run into Randy Sandy, Frankie Riff?
You know what? Let me tell you something about Randy Sandy. This will kill you. Randy Sandy, you know, he grew up in Harlem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, 129th Street. My family was from 126th Street. Mm-hmm. Randy Sandy, are you ready? This is hard to believe. Randy Sandy was the referee in my very first Golden Glove fight.
In the because after he fought pro, he became a referee with the gloves and all. I knew Sandy when we were kids in Horton Center with Sid Martin.
But, you know, I'll tell you something. You know what? Randy, thank God he finally made the Hall of Fame. Randy was one of the best welterweights out there, but because the gangsters had him, gangsters whose name we shall not mention, he had to fight with handcuffs on, you know?
Right.
Wow. Well, you know, it's something like this that he brings up.
He could never beat or get a victory over Willie Troy. Remember Willie Troy?
Oh, yeah.
He could never beat Willie Troy. Because there were handcuffs on him.
They're always fighters that got your number, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy thing about boxing. There's always a fighter got your number. A perfect example. Look at the hell that Ken Norton always gave Muhammad Ali, right?
Yeah.
But,
yeah, but you know what? You know what, Mitch? That's what you do with that though. That was an old Ali. Marion Boykin brings up a very good point. Marion B. Boykin, and the B stands for Black, Bodacious, Brilliant, and a Brother. Yeah, that was the last of the Ali's. You know, maybe the second Ali, but Boykin said you do Ali and Trilogy. You do the first Ali, the guy that got stripped. That guy, Ken Norton, stands no chance again. That guy, who I still thought Ali won the first race, but that guy doesn't have a problem. All the guys that caused him problems, there's no problem for that guy. The guy that lost the 3.5 years. That guy beats everybody. Ken Norton is not even hanging around. Now, the second Ali, okay, still great. Not as great as the first Ali. Okay, Norton gave that guy some problems. But if Norton had fought the first Ali, we would have never heard any more. But Kenny Norton would have went by the way the same way as Carl Mildenberger, the same way as Zorro Foley, you know, the same way as Doug Jones. He'd have been opponent, and we'd have heard no more about
it. But are you telling me, Doc, that the Ken Norton who broke Ali's jaw caught
that,
Ali
that
and
Ken Norton
downhill?
Dusty, that Ken Norton doesn't beat the first Ali. He doesn't beat the guy that lost 3.5 years in the military. Doesn't beat that guy.
Well, you know, I tell you, Doc, I got to agree with you because the Ken Norton that broke Ali's jaw wouldn't have had a chance against the Ali that knocked out Cleveland Williams.
No, I mean, first of all, he wouldn't have hit him. He wouldn't have hit him.
Yeah.
And then to be that close to Ali, he'd have gotten annihilated. I mean, you have to, you know, it's three things, two things. You know, and Boykin says that. You have to do Ali in a trilogy, the first Ali. And point well taken, as Woody would say, nobody ever beat him. That Ali was undefeated.
That's Ali, right.
Didn't lose to a soul. Now we go to the second Ali, who loses a close fight to Joe Frazier in MSG, who gets his jaw broken and still goes the distance to Kenny Norton and then comes back and beats him two more times, and then he knocks out George Foreman, the second Ali. Still a Jaguar, but not the Rolls Royce. Okay. So, I mean, you know, and Kenny, you know, for all intents and purposes, Kenny lived off that. I mean, who else of merit did Kenny ever beat? I mean, nothing that I would say a lot, but, you know, Ken Norton was given the championship and lost in his first defense.
Yeah, but
didn't
He lost to an all-time top.
That's true. I'm not taking that away from him, but if I'm correct, Larry wasn't at 100% when he went into that fight.
He wasn't,
no,
but you know what? Larry Holmes was at the top of his game at that point.
You give credit where credit is due. Larry, the second longest reign of any heavyweight championship outside of Joseph Louis Barrows, who had it for 12 years. Larry had it for 7.5. And no question, a great champion. No question, a great champion. But, you know what I mean? That peekaboo style and that crab move that he had against the first Ali, I mean, he's bleeding, he's cut, he's gone at the end of the seventh round against the first Ali, or maybe he's knocked out. But, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, if you take them at their best. It's the thing with Mike Tyson, and it's sad and touching in the words of Harold Weston Jr., and I think I can dovetail on the great line of point well taken by Rooney. But, you know, nobody ever talks about the 3 years that Mike ever lost. I mean, it's like Michael's on vacation. Nobody ever talks about this guy lost 3 prime years of his career, got railroaded in one of the most horrific traditional injustices of our lifetime. But here's a guy, you know, one thing about Ali, when we talk about Ali, we always do acknowledge his 3.5 year loss. But there are conversations where they talk about Tyson, and they don't mention it, and White America talks about incarceration. There's stories. Sometimes HBO had a movie, The Dark Side of Ray Robinson, and there's allegations of some domestic abuse. But I mean, Jake LaMotta was known as a wife beater, a glorified wife beater. I mean, in the movie, you know. But you know, wow, Dusty, leaving no stone unturned to stand on baby Lord.
No, I mean, I just went and got my little claw tool and dug up a rock.
That's you. That's you. Fox Stanley Sports up on the Blake with an Everett Rainbow Show, Channel Sports Ever Show. They're here. That's Daniel Baby Lewis, Mel Cosell Smith Jr. We are trying to get a coach of Harold Weston Jr. who know would be a great part of this. Skeet, and we got you in here, and you talked about some things, too, that I got my list here because I think I got to make sure I keep talking about this. And we talked about and something too that a lot of people and Dusty, well you're going to say yeah, but it's something a lot of people have never really touched on. There was a subject the other day that somebody had something to, and I meant to say, wow, you know, it's a point well taken. And you know, everybody talked about Marciano retiring, and there was rumors that he retired because he didn't want to fight a young up-and-coming guy by the name of Floyd Patterson, who had won the Olympic gold in the middleweight. But Skin, you said something today earlier when we had Jamie Harris with us, who will be soon joining us. He's out on assignment, of course. And you said, you know, it wasn't Floyd Patterson he was ducking. It was the guy who, when upon incarceration, was the best young heavyweight in the world and came out to be the most devastating heavyweight of his time until he met Cassius Clay. Marciano was ducking Sonny Liston, Mitch.
Exactly. And let me tell you something. You know what? Here's a funny thing a lot of people don't realize. After Sonny Liston lost that second fight to Muhammad Ali, mm-hmm. he won 16
right.
out of his next 16 fights.
Exactly.
Wow.
Before he lost to Leotis Martin. Right, Dusty?
Leotis Martin. That's the one who retired him. Leotis
exactly.
Martin. And Leotis Martin was a journeyman who was good, but not that great. But he was a steady man who did his business. And he's the one that retired. But you're right, Doc. And I agree. There were two dark horses facing Marciano. They had a choice, one from column A or one from column B, either Floyd or Sonny Liston. But Marciano came out. Yeah, go ahead. But Marciano came up and said, look, 49 fights, I had enough. My wife wants me back home. Al Wild was pulling his wig because he had already signed a contract. He signed a contract of consent, and I think he was working on a date. And Marciano says no, and Whitey Bimstein and the other guy, Charlie Goldman, and nobody could convince Marciano to do his 50. Keep it even. Do the 50 and then retire. No good. He was leaving. Because,
let me tell you,
he was softened by the Walcotts. He was softened by the Archie Moores. Those guys dumped him. Those guys hurt him.
And those
Jerry
guys
Joe Walcott.
Archie
Moore.
As Charles tore his nose. Yeah. He tore his nose. He was a bleeder. And to face a guy like a young upstart Olympian like Floyd Patterson, who could have kangaroo his way through the whole 15 rounds, or Sonny Liston, who would club you to death, he wasn't taking those chances. He wanted to go home with his undefeated 49-0. And
you know,
that was big money.
I find it very interesting that they kept Marciano away from guys like Nino Valdez. You know,
yeah, exactly.
He was a knockout artist.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, all the young, good heavyweights, they kept him away from him. You know?
Yeah. Nino Valdez was crying the blues. I remember one time, who the heck told me, Mundito Medina, who used to train Gavilan, he says, Nino Valdez was doing voodoo dances, man, and crying to the gods to get a shot at Rocky Marciano. He said his voodoo didn't work because he wasn't going to get crap. I swear, it was so funny. Mundito Medina, he used to train Gavilan. And he says, no, he's going to the gods and doing it. But Marciano ain't going to fight him. He ain't going to fight him at all. And Valdez was a monster, man.
I'll tell you another guy that kept him away from another knockout artist. His name is Bob Satterfield.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You're bringing up names and my ribs are still hurting. Bob Satterfield was another monster. Are you kidding? These guys were animals, man. And they
exactly.
could fight. They could fight. Oh, my God, man. It's unreal. Unreal. But those guys were, you know, those are the guys who were in the country club of stay away from. Because these guys would hurt you.
Can I ask you a question? I want both of you guys to think about this before you answer it now. It's a question you'll find almost in any barbershop or bar in New York. Would Muhammad Ali, the young Muhammad Ali of the 60s, have been able to beat the Joe Louis of the 30s and the very early 40s?
Well, I got
carte blanche.
Go ahead,
Doc. Although, with carte blanche, I don't think so. I don't think
oh,
so.
Oh, my. Ali was too big and too strong for Joe. I mean, this is the thing that people forgot, and what Angelo talked about. Everybody talked about how big and how strong Sonny was. And he said, hey, my guy just as big. And when they got into the ring, he was just as big. I mean, Foreman may have weighed more than Ali, but Foreman was finally fighting somebody his own size, too. I mean, Ali was just too big, too fast, too strong for Joe Louis. I mean, Ali 1, Ali 2 beats Joe Louis. I mean, you know, Joe was in an era where guys didn't crack 200 as a heavyweight. I've always said
187 was Joe Louis' top weight.
I mean, John Condon told me, too. He says, you know, Ali was just too big, too quick, and too strong. I mean, you know, Joe looked great. I mean, he looked great against the heavyweights he fought, but how many boxers did he fight? I mean, he lost that fight to Judge Joe Walcott that they gave to him, but, you know, he got the second chance. But the thing that made Ali, the thing that made Jim Brown so great and so untouchable, they were Mack trucks, okay, with the speed and mobility of a Porsche. They were just as fast as the fastest guys and just as strong as the strongest guys. So they were too fast for the strong guys and just as strong as them and just as quick as the quick guys and stronger than them. So, I mean, it's no ifs, ands, shakes. I mean, to me, it's no question that Ali beats Joe Louis. I mean, Ali's the greatest heavyweight of all time. I mean, I remember what the late, great Bill Shannon told me. After attending, and Mel Smith Jr. is back with us finally. After attending the, can you hear, Rooney, are you here?
Yeah, Doc, I hope that you can hear me clearly now.
Yeah, we can. You know, I remember what the late Bill Shannon told you. He went into the dressing room, and there is Bob Foster. And he walks and says, hey, you know, you probably, you know, your head just got knocked. And, you probably want to clear your head a little bit. Foster, Foster says, I'm fine. No, it's not my head, he said. I can't believe, he said, that this guy, as a heavyweight, has hands faster than some welterweights. The speed of power. In my mind, there's no. I mean, Joe loved Joe. You know, Joe Louis never lost a fight as a heavyweight champ. But to me, it's as easy as 2 + 2. I mean,
yeah, but you're dealing with styles, and even though Muhammad Ali would have danced around, I feel, this is my opinion, Joe Louis would have gotten to him. Joe Louis would have hit him.
Hey,
Joe Louis hit
about
too
that,
hard. It was
you
too
know,
much
Mark
of the body.
Wow.
And his jab.
Mark Whelan's
the
most prolific
The most prolific jabber in the business today, bar none, this is my opinion, you can shoot me down, was Joe Louis.
Oh, yeah,
nobody
I want
else.
To do that to say.
Wow.
No, nobody else. He had the pattern of a jab. His jab
now,
was
not
that punches, man.
That would have been a fantastic fight. Now, I want you guys to think about this one. Here's another great one. Would Sonny Liston have beaten Joe Louis?
That's a good fight, too. I mean, because what you have here, the thing about Joe is what we forget is the thing about Ray Robinson. And Liston and Louis, you have the two greatest, the two most devastating jabs in the history of the game. Two guys
who
a jab is basically just to feel you out. I mean, these guys are butting the ball and hitting 330 feet over the wall. So, I mean, Joe got hit.
A lot of people don't realize a jab is an offensive and defensive weapon. At
exactly.
The same time.
That's the number one offensive weapon.
And they have it.
Can I get a word in edgewise in this discussion, please?
Oh, go ahead.
I just want to say this quickly. Man, battling you guys is tough. Anyway, I'm just trying to say that, I used to have this discussion with Mark Whelan's former trainer, George. His name was his last name. George Washington at the Bedside Boxing Club an awful lot. And I used to tease him because I know Joe is his guy. As a matter of fact, he said he used to be a sparring partner for Joe at various times. So I used to say, George, you know, Ali, you know, Ali and Joe, who'd have won it, Coach? And his favorite words were, Ali'd have ran, but Joe'd have caught him. He's beloved to say that. And I would have been a fabulous, fabulous fight.
It's amazing how we talk about today's athlete being superior to a certain degree, And yet, in a situation like this, we kind of don't give Ali credit as being, in the case of him, Joe. He would have been just too big and too strong for Joe.
Bigger, stronger, faster,
Doc.
What was he at his fight with, Doc? Around 212, 214 or so?
I mean, it's just too big and too strong. I mean, if a guy like you know, I mean, we talk about the great fight where the light heavyweight had him beat. I mean, you know, Ali was a far superior boxer to him. And the thing about Joe and the thing about Ray Robinson, you know, these guys were offensive fighters. They were not defensive fighters. They could be hit.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, it wasn't. Go ahead, Dustin.
Joe Louis had there was a comment many years ago when he was fighting that Joe Louis had weak temples. Weak temples, and that's why his defense was flawed, he always found himself on the canvas. Remember, Tommy Muriello slapped him and dropped him. Because of the fact that he had weak temples and his defense was not that good. You know, the difference between Joe and Muhammad Ali, this is probably what I'm trying to say, is the fact that there was never a dancer in the heavyweight division like Muhammad Ali. All those heavyweights were plotters. They glided. They glided. And they moved here, and they walked here, and they moved here. But Muhammad Ali was a welterweight in the heavyweight division. You would think that that dude would be a Chuck Davy of the heavyweights, because he had these dudes confused and exhausted. Sure, he had
not only confused us, but let me make this point, Doc. You know, they used to say Ali wasn't a devastating puncher, this and that. He beat you up by the volume of punches that, you know, that he landed. But what folks never talk about Ali is, you know, his opponents will tell you, okay, that they usually got hurt by shots. They didn't see.
That's what hurt you. When the mind can't see it. That's what makes the uppercut so devastating, because you just don't see that punch.
They never saw the shots coming, Doc.
You know what,
fellas? Here's a very interesting tidbit. Joe Louis, right? Now, you tell me whether this would have helped Ali. Joe Louis, when he was getting ready to fight Max Smalling the first time, Jack Johnson, the great Jack Johnson, whom I admire, Jack Johnson came to Joe's camp and offered to help train him. But Jack Johnson still had left a bad taste in fight society's mouth. They hadn't forgotten. And Jack Johnson, when he was rebuffed, he was a bit insulted. He went to the press and told them, he said, the reason Smalling will beat Joe Louis is because when Joe Louis throws his jab, when he brings it back, he brings it back low. He doesn't put it up by his jaw.
And that's what Smalling said. I see something.
Exactly. That's right.
And he did.
He saw something. And you saw, if you guys had the better...
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake.
Now, fellas,
let me
ask you something.
Commercial break.
If you saw the films of Joe Louis, go ahead.
Let me ask you this. If Joe Louis didn't bring that left hand back up, I can see that Ali might have just busted up his eye a bit, might have. Joe would have had a hard time, you know.
Exactly.
Because
don't forget,
Ali's jab, it was like it was coming out of a pitching machine, you know.
Yeah, it was a piston.
You know, the thing about Ali, too,
there
was a lot of Ray Robinson and Ali, in the sense, talking to Scoop of Biofiles, talked about how Ali, you know, Ali did a lot, the first Ali, enough to win. As Ray Robinson had took that approach after killing the young man in the ring, Yeah, maybe he made the comment. He said, you know, I only fought good enough to win. And you know, Ali, you look at his dominance, the first Ali, of a guy who in a lot of ways reminds me of somewhat of Curtis Martin, who said, you know, I didn't want to play pro football. When I got the call, I was drafted. He said, I don't want to play pro football. And he said, you know, I didn't have the passion and the desire and pride of some other. It's something I didn't want to do. And Ali was just so good at something that, you know, it was a gift, but he didn't bring that kind of killer instinct that Tommy Hearns and that Roberto Duran always brought into the ring.
He did something. He fought in a style to hurt and not be hurt, which is the code of the West.
His
style was more defensive than anything else, and dance around and slap you and get a decision. But as he got older and heavier and harder, he learned the art of putting you away. Because as Ringo Bonavena, what happened to him? He came out there and started throwing bombs and all that, and Ali says, "Okay, I'm tired of you." Bam, knocked him out. He did the same thing with Sonny Liston. He played around with Sonny Liston. He danced. He didn't want to get hit by Sonny Liston. He danced.
He's never talking about, okay? They always talk about his hands, speed, and his foot speed. And okay? But what he was reminds me of what I told you in the other show, Doc, about Jason Pierre-Paul, the Giants tackle. He was, and I mean this in all due respect, because Ali is my guy, a physical freak of nature.
Before you came on, I said the thing that made Ali, which makes Ali the greatest ever, which makes Jim Brown the greatest ever, these were guys at the highest level of the weight capacity of their sport, that Jim Brown as a fullback, Ali as a heavyweight, and yet they had all the speed and mobility of the lower class guys. Bob Foster said that. I mean, Brown, he was a guy, he was fast as the halfbacks and as strong as the linebackers. So as a quarterback, when you caught a Willem.
How would Jim Brown do against the defenses of the NFL today?
I'm going to tell you, I asked Gale Sayers the question you asked. I asked Gale Sayers, it was at the Larry Holmes, Mike Tyson press conference, where my daughter Dimity took a great shot with Mike, and I asked Gale Sayers, I said, Mr. Sayers, who was the best running back ever? And he answered the question as if I had asked him his Social Security number. He said, Jim Brown. And I said, well, why? I mean, he gave me the answer that I knew. He said, well, first of all, he was the best. He said, but second of all, he said, Jim Brown ran in the era where the defense was designed to stop the pass, the rush first, and the pass second. He said, all these guys today are playing against a defense that's designed to stop the pass first and the rush second.
The pass second,
But Frank Gifford said, Jim Brown did things that were inhumanly impossible to do. And the only reason why you know he did them was because you saw them. I mean, they said when he went to the movies, what he did on the movie screen was more believable than what he did on the football field. The man got 1,800 yards in a 12-game season. The late Dick.
Exactly.
I remember that movie, The Dirty Dozen, where he had a scene
He had to run to drop the hangman.
My God, look at that man run. Now, he could have been a track star, you know.
Exactly.
he was a three-letter man. He was considered the greatest lacrosse player ever. The Yankees drafted him as a baseball player. Dick Lynch told me, the great defensive back from Notre Dame for the Giants for years, my late friend Dick Lynch, he said, you know, he was all they had. We knew he was coming, and we still couldn't stop him.
Because of the fact that Jim Brown was so strong. He was like a runaway freight train. I think you said that a few seconds ago. And when you tackled him, you're the one that got hurt. And on top of that, you got to understand the geographics of what they're drafting today in football as defensive people. These are Eiffel Towers, man. And in Jim Brown's days, the big guy was Jim Brown, not the tackle dudes.
Dusty, you bring up a point which was kind of brought in by the late, great Paul Brown. Paul Brown was unique because they had made a gentleman's agreement like they did in baseball to keep the black guys out of football. And Paul Paul Brown agreed with the rest of the guys. He just didn't adhere to it. He still got his black players, you know.
Exactly,
and Paul Brown was
exactly.
the guy that helped open the doors to the black players in the NFL. And the oldest man to win a rushing title until Curtis Martin came along was the great fullback who was as big as a linebacker, Marion Motley, okay, who, and you know, now you got this guy as big as you, and
exactly.
he's strong as you,
big,
but he's a little faster than
you.
Yeah. And you know, Brown, you talk about Jim Brown was as big as the big guys and as fast as little guys. It just was a combination.
Powerful.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
a
combination.
And a great thing about Jim Brown is he quit at the top of his game.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's funny you say that. It's funny. Gentlemen, hold on a second. Let me put this plug in here. Doc Stanley, Sports Devil, the Blake, with a network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Death is his show. I keep hoping that Dusty hang up, but he won't go for nothing.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Dusty comes in with the Latin guys. Now he's dissecting all the African football players. Man, you're just dangerous, Dusty. You brought a point up, Dusty. No, it was Skeeter, and you talked about that running scene in the Dirty Dozen, and it's ironic
yeah.
that you also both of you mentioned about him leaving at the apex of his game.
Exactly.
And you know, Jim
yeah.
wanted to do one more year. Jim wanted to do one more year, and he called Art Modell and said, "Look, you know, the movie is some delays. I'm going to be maybe a week, a few days late for camp." And Art Modell said, told Jim Brown, the greatest football player offensively that ever lived, the greatest running back that ever lived, the man who's just gotten you the world championship, the man who's gained the most yards of anybody, the man who scored the most touchdowns in history of the game. Art Modell told Jim Brown that he had to come into camp because he couldn't treat him special, you know, and Jim Brown said, "Well, you know, okay, you know, I'm an old man. Yeah, I mean, Jim got to feel little slapped in the face by this. I mean, you know, he's called. Hey, look, you know, you do 15, 16 years on the job. Yeah, you say, hey, look, I need next Friday off, and they tell you, hey, they treat you like you're a rookie." Jim walked away.
Well, you know what?
Well, and Jim Brown, I think he was quoted many years ago, but he was quoted, "It's your loss, Modell, not mine." Well,
that's right. Modell proved that he spent 3 years in the third
yeah.
grade.
Well, yeah, I tell you, and Dusty, once again, these disagreeing with you thing has to stop. But you know, Art Modell, no, the late great Clayton Riley, in doing a documentary. My friend in radio announcer, he said Art Modell admitted years later that was one of the business decisions that he made was wrong. That was,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
Jim
right,
Brown wanted to come back
right.
home.
That was dumb.
Yeah, and because they kept thinking, they said, well, you know what? You know, Jim will come into camp. You know, they kept waiting because the Browns were favored to win the division again. And when Jim Brown retired, the Cowboys took over. And, you know, and that's about that old thing where, you know, you the great line by Ali in America: no matter how famous you are, no matter how rich you are, no matter how much of a philanthropist you are, you're always just another, the N-word. You know what I mean? And it's in the intro, I have Floyd Mayweather Sr., which we want to talk about, Hector Camacho, we want to talk about him too. But, you know, it's just no matter what you, I mean, it, you know, there's always a problem in America when it comes to paying an African-American athlete. I mean, I remember the thing up in New England when Randy Moss is talking about his money. I mean, you know, you love playing the game, but you're playing it for money. But all of a sudden, it wasn't the New England way. But they had no problem paying Tom Brady. Down in Dallas, when Emmitt Smith set out, he had to sit out, but Troy Aikman, they just gave him the money right away. It's always the problem paying an African-American guy. And I looked at the home run situation with Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds. Mark McGwire, the Maris family supported him. They came out. The very next year, now, I mean, I can remotely understand 2 or 3 years later. The very next year, Barry Bonds broke the record. Nobody came out to greet Barry. Nobody supported him. And it is always maybe a coincidence, but it always seems to come down to a black and white issue. We go to the Olympics, and Gabby Douglas, you know, She wins the first American and African-American to win the all-around and a gold medal with her teammates. And they're talking about her hair, and then they talked about, well, you know, it kind of didn't have the same significance it's supposed to have. And then there was that horrible commercial right after her salutations, her being saluted, that this monkey thing came up. Then you look at the situation that we had again in the Olympics where a bottle was thrown at Vault and the other players. But in this case, it's out of America, but we come back to the American scene. And you know, how does NBC even run? I mean, you're not telling me that nobody up there said, "Wow, there's something wrong with us saluting this girl and then showing something about monkeys on gymnastic equipment." I mean,
you could take it further by the comment about Venus Williams having her hair painted red, white, and blue. And then Serena dancing when she won the gold medal. And why all the criticism? I mean, don't pale faces do the same thing?
It's jealousy.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, Rooney.
It's jealousy. Let me make an analogy, if I may. I'll be brief. I believe it was President Obama's birthday some days ago, Doc. Mm. I believe it was the president's birthday. That is an analogy. That's analogous to the presidential race, okay? I mean, here you have Barack Obama basically trusted getting up for 8 years of wars, craziness as far as the economy and everything else, and they expect this guy to be a miracle worker. Now you have a no-name, no-nothing, like Mitt Romney, who supposedly goes overseas trying to look presidential, and every place in the country that the guy goes in, he makes an absolute fool out of himself. He goes to London and insults the British. He goes to Israel and insults the Arabs and Palestinians.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, let's put it like it is, Doc, and I'm going to come in straight talk, okay? If it wasn't the fact that Barack Obama was a brother, you know, a president, if you will, he, by right, should be leading this presidential race by at least 30 points. The other guy,
Obama could stand, okay, if he was Caucasian, alone on bringing the troops home, stopping the war. Then he could stand part two alone on getting bin Laden. I mean, then he could stand alone on finally getting the economy halfway. It's amazing this memory lapse of the 8 years of Bush. It's like,
loss is by design.
We're going in for these weapons of mass destruction.
Let me ask you guys something.
Go ahead.
What do you think about the comment I heard Louis Farrakhan said? Louis Farrakhan said, he said, Barack Obama was not elected. He was selected. What do you guys think about that?
Say that one more time, man. We want to hear it one more time.
Louis Farrakhan, leader of the Nation of Islam,
mm-hmm.
he said Barack Obama was not elected. He was selected.
I've heard that before, but my point is, so he said that to say what, though? He wasn't elected, he was selected. So he said that to say what?
I think he's saying that Barack Obama's a puppet.
I never read that.
Say that about all politicians in a sense. What's he trying to say? Puppet, and you know, in what sense, though? That's pretty broad.
Mr. Farrakhan is amazing in the statement because he was on television a few months back defending the president in the sense of the constant redundant disrespect being shown to this man of color in the highest office in our country, which is supposed to be the highest office that could be held worldwide. Now it's this election. Interesting notation by the leader of the Nation of Islam, and it's you know, once again now, and it now that's a double-edged sword because
it
okay
is because.
He selected, and then let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Okay, if he's selected, then let's look at him because you know I have problems with people now when things are going in a negative mode. You know, it's like when a war is on and you need people to fight the war, then minorities are all of a sudden Americans. You know, but then when the war is over and there's gains to be gotten, you're no longer Americans. And now, you know, what you're saying here, okay, or if you're saying Obama is a politician, okay.
That's what he is. That's what he does.
Yeah, okay. But let's hold him, if we're going to talk about him in a negative manner, let's also hold him in the positive structures that we've talked about these past, you know, buffoons. I mean, one of the things that my pastor spoke about, my mother's pastor, hi, Mommy, I love you, he spoke about Sunday, and Doc Stanley Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Rainbow Soda Channel Sports Depth for the show. You know when you call in the Sports Depth, any kind of conversation can break out because the crew can handle it. And
let me ask you something, Doc. Hold on, Dustin.
What he was saying that, you know, Obama getting back in office will be the first time you've had a Democratic president be reelected in a positive vein. He said, let's go back. You look at the rhetoric of the Bushes, okay? You look at the Carter situation where you had to hold up. I forget the political issue that messed him up. The Vietnam War messed up Johnson.
Bay of
okay?
Peace invasion.
Yeah, yeah. The and then the scandal that marred and scarred Clinton. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, Obama's going to be the guy that's going to go in 4 years. There's nothing here of a negative connotation outside, I guess, you know, him being black. So if he gets back in again, as opposed to, and that was one of the problems that we had with the big AIDS epidemic in America. I mean, AIDS, initially the problem came from the intravenous use of drugs. And one of the things that was positioned and was on a platform and that was saw as an advantageous issue to delete the problem was the donation and giving of clean needles. And this was something that Clinton had looked into. But when the scandal came about, he no longer had the clout, the power, or the time to push that issue. And so therefore, it, you know, the big line was, you know, why should we give needles to drug users? But actually they were saying, why should we give needles to black people? Because, you know, drugs didn't become a problem in our society until the white kids who always came from the suburbs and always who came from Jersey into Bed-Stuyvesant or into Harlem or into East New York or to Fort Apache in the Bronx to all our centers, and then they went back home. So,
you know, I could never understand why black people and Hispanic people are considered disposable and dispersible. I mean, come on, we may not all be the same kinfolk, but we may not all be the same skinfolk, but we're all kinfolk, you know?
I like that.
Exactly. But, yeah, let's go back to Farrakhan.
Ladies and gentlemen, Senator Justenio Lois from East Bronx.
Selected or elected, but I remember that when he first postulated himself, meaning Barack Obama, Farrakhan was, use your memory, was one of the first ones that went out and said, we will campaign. We wanted to set a platform to campaign for Barack Obama. And, of course, the country was up in arms of saying, how could this radical? And, of course, being a politician, Barack Obama had to respectfully, mind you, decline his support. So maybe out of retribution or whatever, that's what he said.
You bring up a point, Dusty, that such, it adds a lot of positivity. Because one of the big things that white America keeps talking about is that he is Muslim, and he's not Christian. I got an email from a buddy of mine, and I told myself I'm going to stop taking emails. And this thing was said, you know, America needs, you know, another Christian president. And I sent him, you know, I sent him an email. I said, the two things. I said, first of all, was it the Christians that took Christ to the cross? You know? And then number two, was it a Christian president that got us into these wars? There's talk about where he was born, that he's not a Christian.
Yeah.
It just...
Give me his birth certificate.
Yeah.
Donald Trump. You know, these are pieces of garbage, white garbage, that have no other thing to do but to tear a person of color down every way that they can find and justify it.
And, you know, Dusty, that's a damn good point. You know, I heard a radio talk show. They had this young lady. She said, you know, why don't somebody teach Michelle Obama how to walk? Well, I couldn't understand that, right? Then the lady expounded upon the statement. She said, Michelle Obama walks like a country bumpkin with bad feet. And I couldn't help but think, with those bad feet, she walked all the way to Harvard.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. They don't remember.
They never said anything about Barbara Bush, who looked like a freaking duck. Jesus Christ, you know, that's exactly, you know, you hit the nail on the head. This is the garbage that comes out when people of color are in
this
power.
This is America, Dusty. Senator Lewis,
this is a
kick it out. It's America.
Races,
and like I said, in the Olympics, I mean, here's a girl who is the number one gymnastic in the world. She's proven it. Here's a girl who has done things never before done. We have the Williams sisters who've won 3 gold medals as doubles, the first players to win an indoor championship since 1923. She's the first American, okay? Forget the African American, but that's where the problem is. She's the first American to win the Golden Slam. But being African-American, there's always some sort of pun put on. Gentlemen, we're at the 10 o'clock moment. Let us do a quick spot, and we've got another half hour left to go on Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul Channel. Sports and Depth show, Doc Stanley, and he's here. Skeeter is in the house. Hold on. Don't anybody. Hey, as Sid Gatling Jr. would say, don't move another feather.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were 7 wonders of the universe, where here's the 8th, Doc Stanley.
All day, all night, all the time, BlakeRadio.com, music for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel. Sports in Depth is a show. We're in our last half hour here. The special, boxing special, midweek special here. Well, of course, the midweek. And also this Friday, Sports in Depth, our preseason football special. The crew will be here. Sea Wings Raymond will be live on location in Cincinnati, Ohio, as the Jets open the preseason and NFL season in New York City against the Bengals. Sea Wings will be there for our halftime show and our on-the-scene update during the course of the last part of that football game. 9 o'clock this Friday on Sports It Up on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports It Up for the show, Brazil. Hello, Rosie. Brazil today, 3-0 win over Korea. Puts them in.
I thought it was China. It was China or Korea?
Korea. China.
Korea?
China.
Now they're in for silver.
No, well, they've got the silver, at least. They're in the gold medal game. They're going to play Mexico. Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah, they're playing Mexico.
You
going
to play Mexico?
Yeah, Mexico beat...
Oh, hooray for Mexico.
Mexico beat them... They won 3-1. Let me go to Rosie. I think I've got Brazil live here. Let's go to Brazil. Okay, I thought Rosie was going to tell me something. Brazil won 3-1. No, Brazil won 3-0. Another shutout. Their second shutout against they beat Korea today.
Korea,
Mexico,
okay,
was a 3-1 victor over Japan, I believe it was.
That's
so
what
they're,
it was, Japan.
So they're going to
team.
Yeah, they're going to be playing for the gold medal game, and Brazil, this will be their opportunity to win the only only medal of merit that they haven't won as a country. So they've scored 3 goals in all their games. Today, a defensive gem again, their second shutout. The great Neymar, who is Barcelona's looking at, he's rated as the 3rd best footballer in the world behind Messi and Ronaldo, but he's the best player in Brazil right now. He's a phenom, 20-year-old superstar, leading them to victory today. He's looking to go to Barcelona, and already his other duo, the Batman and Robin part, Oscar, is going to be playing for Chelsea. But also, Brazil's men volleyball players, I got to catch their names, they're in the gold medal round. They're shooting for the gold medal. And the first Brazilian ever to win a gold medal in individual sports, Sara Menezes, who won a gold medal in judo early in the week. She's the first Brazilian ever to win an individual gold medal, and the first Brazilian ever to win an individual gold medal. So she won a gold medal in judo.
You got the Brazilian who did the gymnastics. I forget his name. Who won a gold
medal. But she won the award. She's the first ever to win an individual award. She won her award the early part of the week. She's the first one ever to win an individual award in the history of Brazil. Brazil also, as you said, we had today we had a Brazilian male, for the first time ever, win on the rings. We've also had, as you know, Brazil is going to win at least a silver medal in football. We've also had their women's volleyball team. And there's a lady who made it tremendous. There was a game. You learn something every day. Volleyball game. And one of the defensive players, Fabiano Olivaria. And, wow, she... the ball was going out. She kicked it back on into the playing area, and the Brazilian team went on to win the point. My good friend said she, today, an American female won the pole vault gold medal, and Fabriana, I got to make sure I say her name right, she is the number one female pole vaulter. I'll get her name for us in a minute in Brazil. I got to see where she ranked. But Brazil has done very well. One gentleman won a bronze and was so enamored with his medal that he took it everywhere, and even in the shower, and it fell and broke. So the committee is trying to get him another medal back. We had another judo winner in Brazil. If you go on my blog, too, I want everybody, once again, as I take this chance, to DocStanleySports.com. Take a look at my site there, DocStanleySports.com. A lot of things that I have there in the Trust in God Sports in Depth Artifact Entertainment Hall of Fame. Also, my blog, Doc Stanley Sports in Depth blog, sports.com. Those stories are up there about the Brazilian team. I have one on tomorrow as I will be saluting some of all the Brazilian players. But once again, the Brazilian men's team is in for the gold medal round. Sara Marines from northeastern Brazil. You know, the way Brazil is structured, the north moves closer to the equator, and therefore you have the more of the Texas, Florida, California, all tropical year-round weather. And the further south you go into Brazil, São Paulo, Rio de Janeiro, and Volta, I got to get the correct spelling for her city again, Rosie. That's where you have more of the, what Brazilians call winter in São Paulo is what you call fall. What we call fall. I remember about 3 years ago, my good friend, my afiado, which means that the man who I was the best man for his wedding, and he was telling me, he says, you know, Stanley, I want to apologize because we're going through a little rough winter. And it was like about 55 degrees, and I said, wow. I said, that's you know, I could live with that. Yeah, what's her name? Okay, Rosie, what's your city? You know, this lady's amazing. You know, she listens to Sports in Depth all the time. Yes, Mia Moore, your city. Manda me seu nome e você cidade, por favor. Agora, happy though, manda me agora su nome você cidade. Por favor. Happy Obella. My little Portuguese, I even got to learn some more. Volta.
Yeah, all right. I'm sure.
Okay.
No, that's all right.
It is. It is.
Yeah,
okay.
It sounds kind of good.
Okay. Chester is Volta.
It sounds good.
Volta.
It sounds good.
Rosie. Now, am I saying this right? Volta Redonda. Sing. Volta. Volta Redonda. Fala, sing her now. Volta Redonda is where she is. It's a little city outside of, I'm getting my some Portuguese lesson. Okay, I said it right. Muito bom, obrigado. Volta Redonda is where she's from. She is our number one listener. If other listeners out there, 914-330-695. If you can call us, if not, you can always Skype me. DocStanley1 is my Skype address. But, you know, we had some problems Sunday. She's learning English from the show. She's a big fan of the show, and we just really can't thank her enough for her dedication and her zeal and faithfulness to us. And like I said, we are so glad that her father is home, and she's always in our prayers and in our thoughts. And so, Rosie, thanks a lot for my Portuguese lesson. And, gentlemen, once and one more time, we want to salute Brazil. Let me go back to what you got to say.
Hey, Doc.
Yeah.
And, you know, Doc, one thing you did not say,
yeah,
and one of the things that Brazil is most famous for,
mm-hmm,
it has some of the most beautiful women on the planet.
Listen, no, not some of. They do. They have the most women on the planet. Rosie, you're in that today. You know, I've had a chance. I've had a chance, by the grace of God, it's all good and wonderful to come. I've had a chance to go to Brazil. I've been to Panama, Dominican Republic. I've been to Guam. I've been to Thailand. I've been to Italy. Some other places, Mexico, and they are the most beautiful women that the good Lord has ever created, and the people too. You know, the great international lawyer, Jason Cotamasso Jr., once told me, he said, Stanley, my people are poor but they're happy, and what you, my brother, this Saturday we had a family affair, and he said, you know, the quality of life outside of New York is just amazing, and that's why he said he stayed in Jersey. But the quality of life outside of America, and I was sitting having lunch early part of this year, and a buddy of mine, he said, we're in Brazil, and he says, Doc, you know, you can't beat this. He said, you know, first of all, we paid about 7 reais, which is about $3.50. He said, now, there's nothing here that's been processed. Everything is cooked, and we're drinking a freshly made juice. And you look at these people, they know how to live. When the sun goes down, they go to bed. You know what I mean? Family is important, and we've lost so much of that here in America. The man where he stands, my pastor, the pastor of my grandfather's church at my Freedom Reunion, Jim, you did a great job, and he said something. He said, you know, our society has moved to the point now that you're in the house and you're using your cell phone to call your son upstairs to see if he's in the house. I mean, you know, there's no more sitting down at the table at the end of the day and everybody eating all together. There's no more communication, and that's such a vital part of our society. And you look at Brazil, besides the most beautiful women in the world, the people, the friendliness. You know, a sad commentary, Dusty and Mel Cosell-Smith, and Skeeter, I mean, you know, the 60s, man, was a beautiful, you'd walk, hey, what's up, bro? Hey, what's going on, my brother? You know, now, you know, African-American men, they hardly feature, you say, hey, man, you don't know me. People don't say hi no more. They don't, everybody's a suspect. There's no more of the camaraderie. There's no more of the pride. I mean, you'd be walking down the street in the 60s, 70s, man, tag. Hey, bro, man, I'm trying to get, hey, man, here you go. And there's this pride. I see a lot of the girls, they look out for each other, which reminded me of Thailand. You know, they looked out for each other. There's a bond. There's a relationship. And, you know, Skeeter, you're right. But the women there, Mel Cosell is back with us, they're the most beautiful women I've ever seen from every vantage point, every aspect of a lady. And the thing that we find, too, with women of color, women of Caribbean and Latin American countries, they know how to treat their man. You know, they like you for you. You know, whether you have $2.5 million in the bank or $2.50. I mean, you know, the great line that the late, I read something in a book that Earl Flynn once said, Skeeter, Rooney, Dusty, it's comical. Earl Flynn said, he said, a man that dies with more than $1.84 in his checking account is crazy. You know, so, And but yeah, they have one of the great fighters too, Edward Jofre's, great welterweight champion.
Edward Jofre.
Yeah, and when Jofre, I think I said Brazil Jofre, when Ali visited there, he remarked about what an outstanding fighter this guy was, and that weight and what he had done also for the Brazilian people. A lot of pride. And, you know, the pride, though, Americans, I mean, now you look at the pride tried to be displayed by Zena and Venus Williams. You look at the pride that was tried to be displayed by Gabby Douglas. And you, we go back to that thing about George. When people forget that, you know, Tommy Smith, I talked today about the Honorable with Susan Mendoza and her husband, Reverend Keith Mendoza. You know, people forget that Tommy Smith and John Carlos were not supposed to be an isolated incident. That Olympics was where the African-American athletes were going to take a stand. If people remember, Jabbar did not go. Jabbar
right.
did not go.
Yeah.
And Jabbar boycotted that Olympics because of the despicable, continuous ways African-Americans were treated in America. Jabbar did not go, and Smith and Carlos was supposed to be part of a contingency of African-American athletes that were going to show their discontentment and unify and bring into the world, exposing this discontentment by African-American athletes. What happened, a lot of the other athletes got cold feet, backed off, and left Tommy and Carlos hanging by themselves.
You know, yeah. I did a little research.
Shortly thereafter, this is basically why I never liked this guy. I was so glad when Ali smacked him around. Foreman came in after that, I guess, to show that, hey, I'm not with them, and did that two-step American flag.
You know, a tremendous point. Now, Skeeter, you start to say something for a minute?
Yeah. You know, I did a little research the other day. I went to the library. And I was doing a little research on Jesse Owens,
mm-hmm.
and they did a section on Tommy Smith and John Carlos. And Tommy Smith made a statement. He said, this was back in the year 2001.
Mm-hmm.
He said, to show you how much I know the mentality of, quote, the powers that be, he offered his Olympic gold medal up for sale for $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And when he had, and when he had no takers, he said he knew that they wouldn't buy it because of who he was and the courage that he and John Carlos displayed.
He knew that they wouldn't buy it.
He knew they wouldn't buy it because he said that he knew that it would be to them, it would be like an insult to them, because here's a man who was an Olympic champion and broke the record at that time at 19.8.
You're talking about, was it Carlos Smith that broke the record?
It would have been
admitting and acknowledging what they had. It had been a double-edged positive sort, admitting
exactly.
and acknowledging what they had done. And you know, and another
exactly.
thing people forget, and I never forget that great line. Well, it's an infamous line, but people forget that it was Brent Musburger. Okay, it was Brent Musburger who said, okay, they look like stormtroopers.
Yeah, storm. I remember that comment. You're right, he did.
Yeah. But you see, and this is what people have to understand, that unfortunately, of the majority got cold feet and did not display
they left
right. But you see, you have to go back. Somebody mentioned Jesse Owens. You have to go back to how Jesse Owens showed his mettle and conviction, because he was urged. He was urged by the Urban League and all those NAACP not to go to the Olympics, to boycott the Olympics because of the racism that was, of course, perpetrated against people of color. He says, no, I got to go out there. And I got to win, and I'm going to show them that despite the race, we are good people.
Jesse Owens, also in that research that I came across, you know, it was customary for the chancellor, who was Adolf Hitler at the time, A couple of gold medal winners, he went and had shook their hands and had his picture taken.
Exactly.
And when Jesse Owens got his gold medal, he left the stadium. And someone asked him, he said, well, why didn't you take a picture of Jesse Owens? And he said, and I quote, do you think I would have my picture taken with a Negro? Unquote.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know who told me that? Folklore, my dear father. My dear father, who was around that area, he says, you know something about the master race and Jesse Owens? And he told me the story.
For you, baby.
Hitler would refuse to shake hands and acknowledge the fact that Jesse Owens beat the best racer in Germany. Germany, right in Nazi land. And Hitler sitting at that podium refused to shake it. That's a story my father told me, and I read up on it. I said, son of a gun.
Your father was 100% right, Dusty. Yeah. The guy's name was Lutz Long.
Right, and let me piggyback into another situation. this is so funny. You guys are talking history, man. When Max Belli knocked out Joe Louis, he went back to Germany. Man, the man could do no wrong. He was wined and dined as the hero of the master race. When he came back and Joe Louis killed him, he's lucky he wasn't hanged.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
I'll tell you something, too, Dusty. I remember the late, great Eddie Robinson and Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network, the show. When I started this show, I said, you know, we're going to do 2 hours, 90, and we'll probably have to do an extra half an hour, mic on, lights up. And I remember, I think, if I got Rosie back here, I remember, she's got to go. Okay, Rosie, everybody say goodnight to Rosie, gang. Say goodnight.
Goodnight, Rosie.
Goodnight,
Rosie. Bye-bye,
they said goodnight, Rosie. We're going to see you, too. And I remember what Eddie Robinson said to me, the late, great Eddie Robinson, and he said, he remembered this when Joe Louis came into the ring. The radio announcer said, and the American, Joe Louis, is entering the ring. And he said, that was the first time I ever heard a black man called an American. And I remember, what? I just wanted to say that Coach Robinson, we have some autographed posters and footballs in the Trust and Guard Sports in Depth Artifact Entertainment Museum here. DocStanleySports.com is a sports site. You know, you can reach me email-wise, DocStanleyAOL.com. Also, I have the blog, DocStanleySportsBlog.com. So you can check the blog. And, it never changes. The situations, you know, racism is so much embedded in a part of America, and it's not going to change. And I told Ken Griffey Jr. something about 10 years ago. I said, you know, there are less black players in baseball today than there were 20 years ago. And
yeah.
I got to try to catch this guy this Thanksgiving. I got to catch this congressman. He had a friend. And the coach, because I said, you know, Juan Marichal was the greatest Hispanic pitcher. Well, I told Yvette down at the...
Yeah, I agree with you on
today.
That. Juan,
the lovely Yvette. Gentlemen, I'm having some problems with this. It's going to mean probably another half hour with Dusty. But for the sake of you know, letting the better man mean, we're probably going to have to do mic on, lights off. Because I think if nobody wants to go, I think, you know, we've got to keep this conversation going. It's a great show.
Indeed. And, Doc, I was one fighter that I would truly love to mention. Since you talked about the great fighters of yesteryear and today, and I think I would really be remiss if I didn't mention his incredible heart, drive, and determination as the very embodiment of a fighter, and that is the Matthew Saad Muhammad, aka Matt Franklin.
A great champion. I remember. The MAPS card that got aborted, and it was the first time because Matthew said Muhammad and Eddie Mustafa Muhammad said they would not fight each other because they were Muslim brothers, but they were going to be. It was a great card. They were going to be in that card. Card was headlined by Kenny Norton and Jerry Cooney, with the undercard fight also being the semi-main event was going to be. Okay, yeah, two semi-main events: Eddie Mustafa Muhammad against Matthew Said Muhammad, and Wilfredo Benitez against Tommy Hearns. A card got aborted. Smith was promoting it, and some things came up. But, yeah, a great chance. I remember a fight he had against Jack. And I remember the fight, Dusty, and you don't remember this, but we were out to some of your family members in New Jersey. It's a Sunday. Got in my Pacer. You, your wife, I believe had Mel and Turk with me, and we went out to a relative of yours in Jersey. They had a barbecue, and the fight was on. Jackie Lopez, who was getting the title shot because Mike Rosman took him as a tune-up instead of going straight to Nakusat Muhammad. He got tuned up. And
yes,
what happened was that Lopez was winning the fight, knocking Nakusat around from pillars to posts. And then about the 12th round, Nakusat came on. They stopped the fight in the 13th or 14th round and interviewed Jackie Lopez first. And they said, what happened, Jackie? Jackie said, he's a great champion, and I just got tired of hitting him. And you know, he always dressed well. I've got a nice picture of me and him. And he reminded me a lot of Ray Robinson with his features and stuff, which is right, just a truly great champion and a credit to the game and to his race. But, you know, I look at baseball, and one of the things that this particular gentleman said is that, you know, even in the game of baseball today, they're drafting African-Americans of a certain color. You know, if you're not a certain complexion type, they're not drafting you anymore, you know, and you look around. Everybody wants to say hi to him, but Steve Glazer out there, and he's also from Brazil. There's a second call from Brazil. I'm telling you, we are all saying hello. And Rosie, she called me from Volta Redonda, and Steve is calling me from Fortaleza, 250 miles away from the equator, 85 degrees every day. It is the capital of the state of Ceará, and it'll be one of the places in 2014 that will host one of the World Cup games. And Brazil is hoping to win that gold medal. Steve Glazer says hello to everybody. We're saying back to you, Stevie. Steve is an amazing story. Steve's family went to Brazil when he was very young. They moved from Brooklyn, New York to Brooklyn, São Paulo. And he speaks fluent Portuguese. He reads it, he writes it, he interprets it. You know, I'm always amazed when we're around some people, and you know, Steve has been there like his whole life, and they'll say, "Man, he really speaks Portuguese well." I said, "Yeah, he does." You know, that's like saying Michael Jordan can handle the basketball quite well. And we want to say hello to him from Fortaleza. So we've had internationally, we've had Fortaleza and Redonda Volta. Volta Redonda join us, as well as whoever else around the world. We have some English and all. Gentlemen, what we're going to do, we're going to mic on, lights off. Hang on. Larry Hardesty will bring us out and bring us back. If everybody wants to stay, don't nobody say a word. Larry, do this for me.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Yeah. Greatest African sportscast is New York City Radio. Larry Hardesty.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Bitter Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network is the show. As we open all our shows, we try to open a little John Coltrane for you. Mic on, lights off, so we're going to be here another at least 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes, as we had Skeeter Mitchell, our special guest. So, Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Bitter Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network is the show. Live your life today. Just stand before God tomorrow. Life's most essential, urgent questions. What are you doing for others, service to others? Is don't you pay for your space on Earth? I say, trust in God. Don't move. We're back. Mic on, lights off. We've got the crew here, Mel Smith Jr. Oh, we didn't lose Mel because he may not be able to get back in now. It's General Baby Lord. Okay. And yeah, with Mel is here. And we got the scooter. Okay. So with that, dear Lord, thank you for our part two. And we're going to get to rocking and a rolling in just a minute as we continue. There's Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Mic on, lights off. And in the background, one of my favorite tunes, or my favorite, I gotta say he's my second favorite saxophone player. Coltrane's first. Stanley Turrentine is my second. And as the world is watching the Olympics, we want to take a salute to the United States. Gabby Douglas, the two gold medals. The basketball team who surpassed the record that Brazil had. Brazil had scored the most points in a basketball game. They had scored 138 points. USA last week broke that record, 156 points. Shot 71% from the field. 71% from the field. Broke the record for points scored. Had 77 points at the half. And Carmelo Anthony from the New York Knickerbockers broke the one game. I was surprised too. I would have thought really the record would have been a lot higher, but he surpassed the record by another New Yorker, another Brooklynite. 31 points against Spain was scored by Stephon Marbury, which was the record. It just shows you how the game has changed. You look back at this whole thing started with the clock and stuff like that. Stephon had 31 points. He was surpassed by Carmelo Anthony with 37 points. So he broke the record not only for being on the team that scored the most points in the history of Olympic play, but from an American standpoint of view, he scored the most points by an American in an Olympic game. America shot 71% from the field. That's crazy. 71% from the field. And also broke the record for three-pointers. The record was once held by Brazil. Brazil is in the gold medal game, trying to win their first-ever gold medal in the Olympics. And a lot of hanky-panky is the reason why they haven't done it before. They'll be playing Mexico. Mexico was a 3-1 winner today over Japan. Brazil, another shutout, 3-1 winner over Korea. They are volleyball gentlemen also in the finals. Mr. Soares and Mr. Melo played the longest doubles match in the history of Olympic tennis. They're Brazilian. They won it. The lovely Sarah Marinas, I may be saying that wrong, the first ever Brazilian to win a individual medal at the Olympics and ever win gold judo medal. We also had some other winners there, which we will tell you about today. We had another gentleman, the first time a Brazilian has ever won the on the rings. He became the first Brazilian Lord of the Rings as he picked up another medal. Brazil has done well. Their female volleyball team is in the running, too. So we just want to take a hats off. America, as we know about Gabby Douglas, Serena Williams and her sister, Venus, third Olympics in a row, and they said they're going to Rio de Janeiro in 2016 to defend their doubles championship. Serena, the first American ever to win the Golden Slam, first African-American. That's what America has problems. You throw the African part in there to win the Golden Slam. I don't know what her dancing had to do with anything. You know, these are two girls who are very patriotic. They're wearing these red, white, and blue colors. They're patriotic. They're saluting the USA chants. And it just, you know, it just never seems to go away. I did an article on my blog. Take a look at it, Doc Stanley's Sports in Depth blog. Sports, you know, it's just the ugly side of America. Just America will always let the world know how to deal and how to keep African Americans in their place. This whole thing with Gabby, they're talking about her hair, you know, they're talking about the reward is not as significant as it used to be. They're talking about Serena dancing. And the words of Harold Weston said in touching, and I was said in touching, we didn't get a chance to get Harold with us here, too. But we've got another good half hour, so. We've been talking about a host of things. And what I want to get to you, too, is you talked about the confrontation that you had with the man.
Floyd Mayweather
Jr. Senior. I remember that fight. He fought a guy named Jose the Threat Barrett, beat Barrett, and had those long boxing trunks on that John Connors said reminded him so much of Archie Moore. But you talked about a small little fight that almost happened before the fight.
Yeah, but you know what? Looking at it, thinking about it, you know, it was really just a matter of ego because
We were both young. We were loaded with testosterone. And we were going to fight in the locker room over who got the biggest locker in the locker room. Now, if that's not silly, because we could have gotten into a little thing, we could have hurt our hand and not gotten paid that day, you know? Mm. And if you really look at it on another scale, we would have cheated the fans to a certain extent because there were people who came paid to see him fight and people who came and paid to see me fight. But thank goodness, cool heads prevailed, and it came to pass that my opponent, Manuel Taker Jr., was also in that locker room, so they took me out of there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I want to ask you something. Getting away from boxing, 1 minute. A fellow said to me the other day, he said, if Alex Rodriguez was back in Babe Ruth's day, he wouldn't have been as big as he is today. Do you agree with that?
I would have to agree with that.
Well, if he was back in Babe Ruth's day, he wouldn't be playing. But Alex Rodriguez is the greatest all-around shortstop that ever played baseball. I mean, he's the only infielder to do 40-40. He has the most home runs of any shortstop. He's had the back-to-back 50 home run seasons. The thing with Babe is the same thing that I say is that, you know, it's amazing by who criteria you're going by. And Rooney, you know, I know you're going to jump in this, but how great Babe didn't play against the best player. Baseball doesn't start for me to 1947, okay? And so when Jackie and even then, Satch and Josh and Judy Johnson and Max Manning and Rube Foster, Judy Jenkins, Willie Wells, Carl J. Dent, Armando Vasquez, Robert Scott, Poncho, all those guys should have been playing. So had Babe played against those guys, does Babe hit 60 home runs in a season? Jackie Robinson won the MVP in 1949. Okay? Now, in 47, he became the first man, not African-American, the first player ever to win the one-year given award of Rookie of the Year. Okay? In 1949, he becomes the first African-American to win a batting championship and MVP award. In 1956, Don Newcomb becomes the first man, not black man, the first man to win the Cy Young and MVP in the same season. In 1967, Orlando Cepeda becomes the first man in the National League to win the MVP unanimously, as he had won the Rookie of the Year award, becoming the first player to win that award unanimously. From 49 to 69, only four non-men of color won MVP award. Okay?
I believe that Alex would have been able to hit anybody in any era. Now, let me ask you, what do you guys think about what Reggie said about Alex?
Well, I mean, Reggie...
Well, there is merit. There is merit in what he said because of the fact that Alex may have... Oh, see, there's a big question mark. May have upgraded his home run prowess because of the steroids.
We're going to argue.
Doc, let me finish. You're going to cut me off. No. Let me finish. I would be suspicious of the man hitting those home runs and being that much of a prolific ball player if he hadn't been juiced up. Now, there are guys who were not juiced up who did almost as well. I mean, Reggie and guys like that. So this is why there is merit in what Reggie said. He said it at the wrong time.
You're right about the wrong time because he's being paid by the Yankees. But I don't – steroids does not enhance your ability.
Oh, come on, Doc.
You either can play the game or you can't.
It doesn't help you hit the ball, but if you do hit the ball, it will go further.
Well, you see, you bring up a good point, because I asked Dusty Baker about a certain guy, and Dusty said, well, have you ever seen anybody get older hit a ball further? the thing I'm saying here is, when that steroid list came out, it was amazing. I talked to Big Poppy. What a great guy. He had so much homage to... to our late good friend Kirby Puckett. And you know, it's amazing that when that list came out, Rodriguez, Big Papi, and Manny Ramirez, of all those hundreds of names, only guys of color. That's only got linked. I think it's taken a lot away, but it was pitchers who first brought the game in. But we, on this show, you were here, Dusty, and you were too here, Mooney, when Bert Flowers said something that's quite profound. He said, you know what? If everybody is doing it, then who's cheating? You know, I mean, if everybody's doing it, I think what happens is, and you know, I you never hear white guys mention, you know, when Pettit and Giambi got into it, it was mentioned and it was gone. You know what I mean? They started telling you about how sick Pettit's dad was and about his son.
His arm.
And it was gone. You know, all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't a big deal, and they were mad at Giambi because he got caught because they were trying to catch Barry. They were pissed at him at. You know, we're trying to catch Bonds. Yeah. What the hell? We caught you. So, I mean, great players can play in any era, but baseball doesn't start, to me, to 47 when all the great – well, when the black players get it. Unfortunately, Satchel and Josh and the great Negro League players that I named, they weren't there. So I can't – you know, how great could Babe Ruth be if he didn't play against the best players of all time? And so,
because he had no competition. He was probably the best of the worst. I mean, for Duke.
Wow, Dusty, I like that. The best of the worst.
I like that, Dusty.
I'm going to handle your platform for election. The best of the worst. I like that, Dusty.
Yeah, right.
And he goes up there with the six Budweiser hangovers. No, I don't think Budweiser was invented then. I think it was Rango. And he goes in there, boos up, and somehow or other he finds, that was his steroids, and he goes out there and he hits home runs all over the place.
Well, you know what's good for them too in that day, Dusty? You know how, but it could work for them because they played day baseball every day. You know, and that was really great.
Yeah.
You know, there was no night games. You played. You know you're going to play at 3 o'clock every day. And the farthest place you're going was St. Louis, you know. So you're playing the Red Sox, you're playing the Orioles. In fact, in those days in Boston had the Red Sox and the Braves. You know, Philadelphia had the A's, the Athletics, and the Phillies. So what the heck, man? You were talking about it was a train ride. It was an hour ride to Philly,
yeah.
Hour ride to Boston. So you know, you didn't have the kind of travel restraints on your body that you know the players have today. I you know, Alex, the great players could play in any era, but it's just if you look back at the game, I mean, look at the Latin players. I mean, it was in 1965 that a Latin player won MVP in Major League Baseball, Zorro Fasales. And then the next year, the greatest Hispanic player, for my money, Roberto Clemente, won it in 66 in the National League. I mean, a black man didn't win the award in the American League until 1963. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Elston Howard.
Exactly.
You know, it's sad and touching. No, hold on. I want to. You also talked about. We talked about the locker room incident. You talked about the Hector Camacho incident with Louis Loy, and you also talked about. Did you talk about Jim Jeffries?
Yeah, Jim Jeffries. Jim Corbett.
Okay, can you hear us on Corbett?
Yeah.
Corbett. I mean, him and Dusty used to spar sometime, him and Corbett.
Gentleman Jim fought a black fighter named Peter Jackson.
Peter Jackson, my Lord. Yeah, go ahead.
And they called him the Black Prince. He was a great fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And they was always drawing the color line against him because they knew they couldn't beat him.
Mm.
So, Jim,
exactly.
You know, John L. Sullivan told Corbett, he said, look, you go fight that nigger, Peter Jackson, and beat him, and I'll give you a shot. And he did.
Yep.
But the thing is, when Corbett fought Peter Jackson, they fought to a 61-round draw. 61-round draw.
Absolutely. Wow.
And Corbett,
wow.
Corbett got his shot, beat Sullivan, and
exactly.
when Peter Jackson said, well, now can I get a shot?
Mm-mm.
Corbett made the most outrageous conditions for the fight. Like, for instance, he said, well, the fight's got to be held in Mississippi. Now, come on.
So Corbett did fight him.
No,
before. He fought him before he won the championship.
Before he became
champion. Okay, yeah.
But once he won the championship, he had a shot at him.
The 61 now, pounds. That is unbelievable.
And you know what? Here's a sad note to this. After Gentleman Jim Jeffries defeated Corbin, by this time, Peter Jackson had contracted tuberculosis, which was kind of rampant.
Yeah, he was too old. He was sick, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was too old, too sick to get.
Yeah. And when he fought him, right, Dusty, Gentleman Jim won. But, it was a disaster.
So Corbin didn't fight him, but Jim Jeffries did.
Yeah.
Corbin wouldn't fight him
once he became champ.
Yeah.
But Jim Jeffries did. Now, let me tell you something. You know, they were good for drawing the color line, the American champion. But when Tommy Burns won the heavyweight championship, see, Tommy Burns, he believed in one color. That was green.
Exactly. That's what he fought. Jack Johnson was in Europe or something, or Paris.
He fought him in Australia.
And fought him. I mean, he fought him for $35,000, man.
$35,000
is $35 million here today. I mean,
That was big money. Burns fought Jack Johnson. Yeah, Burns fought Jack Johnson. That's how Jack Johnson won the championship.
He beat Burns, and it was an amazing thing. That fight was in Australia. Am I correct?
Yeah, it was in Europe. He had a fight in Europe. He couldn't fight in New York. United States.
And it's just an amazing thing about it. The fight was in Australia, December 26, 1908.
That's right.
All hell broke loose in America. It's amazing.
Yes.
There's no justification for it if it had America. But here's a fight that was a continent away, down under, and when word got to America that Jack Johnson was the undisputed heavyweight champ, all hell broke loose all through Black America.
Whites were invading the black townships, man, and beating them up because they became uppity. Because they had a white man under the heavyweight crown, they burnt them, they raped them, they robbed them, they hung them.
Here's Burns, who loses to him, and you got to take your hat off to Burns, who said, I got a color, it's green, but Burns loses to Jack Johnson in Australia the day after Christmas, and all hell broke loose in America.
Yeah, and Burns.
Now, and
Burns,
if you think that was bad,
killed.
Huh?
If you think that was bad, now, when he fought Jim Jeffries, that was, quote, the first fight of the century, which is a little bit ludicrous because the century was only 10 years old.
Yeah.
But, 1910, July 4th. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Jack Johnson knew that he could beat Jim Jeffries. Because Jim Jeffries had been out the ring so long, he had to lose almost 100 pounds to get back in shape.
Right, yeah, off his alfalfa farm, and
as he was knocking him down, the crowds went up against him. The crowd, don't let the nigger knock him out.
Yeah.
Don't let the nigger knock him out. And then when they stopped the fight, Jack Johnson was, without a doubt, the undisputed heavyweight champion. But they figured because since Jim Jeffries hadn't been defeated in the ring before he retired, that he was still the champion. But in between Tommy Burns and Jim Jeffries, Jack Johnson fought the middleweight champion of the world. His name was Stanley Ketchell.
Stanley Ketchell
was a fantastic fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
His record was 49 wins, 49 knockouts out of 51 wins.
Mm.
And
well, 49
knockouts out of 51 wins at that time. And if you ever look at the film, and Dusty will tell you, when they had made an agreement just to carry and make some money on the fight.
Ketchell got carried away, knocked down Jack Johnson.
Johnson turned
around, knocked out Stanley Ketchell, and when they took the gloves off, there was three of Ketchell's teeth in the gloves.
That's right. That's right.
Exactly.
Here's the thing: those guys were good friends.
But Ketchell kind of, in this case, the white boy got uppity.
He thought he could beat Jack Johnson. He wanted to show off. And Jack Johnson says, okay, bam.
Let me tell you this, gentlemen. I love Jack Johnson. I got a beautiful picture of Jack Johnson in my home. When Jack Johnson lost to,
Jeff Willard, I'll be honest with you.
But you know what? Let's be honest. I mean, I love Jack Johnson, but the guy was 37 years old. He hadn't trained sufficiently. He was in Cuba because he had jumped, you know, pretty much jumped.
Yeah.
From the Mann Act. Yeah.
Yeah, which was ludicrous. I mean, he wasn't in the best of shape. And if you ever look at films of that fight, for the first 8 rounds, he honestly tried to take Jeff Willard out.
Mm-hmm.
He was destroying, he was hurting Jeff Willard. But my father told me something. See, I got to go back with my father. God bless him. My father told me something. He says, if you look at the picture, Johnson laying on the canvas in that hot sun, you could see that he was not really knocked out. He was shielding the sun by shielding his eyes from the sun with his arm over his eye. He was not knocked out. He gave the fight away. I mean, he took a dive.
Yeah.
And you know what?
You know what though?
Yeah.
If you and I are going to fight, and we're going to fight in Cuba where we know it is hot as hell.
Exactly.
If I'm going to take a dive, ain't I going to go down quicker than the 26th round? I mean, I'm not going to stay up and take a beating for 26 rounds, and it's 110 degrees, I mean.
Exactly.
Wow. 26 rounds. Wow.
I'm telling you.
But can you ding, 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 the winner? At the end of 2 minutes, 18 seconds, that's crazy, 26 rounds.
I'm going to say something. I think you gentlemen will probably run me out of the country.
Good.
But I'm pretty fair for Square, who's been run out of Delaware.
Okay.
I think that Jack Johnson would have beat every other heavyweight champion that came after him. I really do.
Jack Johnson was the best, in my opinion. I mean, bar none, with all due respect to the Ali, Joe Louis, and everybody else who followed, Jack Johnson was the best.
I'm going again with Ali beating Jack because Ali would have been just as big or bigger than Jack. I mean, we have a tendency to see Ali only as a boxer, but Ali was a big man. Mitch, one more time. Now you say that was a 61 round fight draw that they had.
A 61 round draw between Peter Jackson and Gentleman Jim Corbett.
Yeah, because if you remember, gentlemen, in the old days, a knockdown was a round. When the guy got knocked down, they constituted that a round. So if you got knocked down 50 times, that was a round. They have 50 round fights.
That's right. That
was the situation in those days. You see?
Looking at the pride, I mean, what white man wanted to be knocked down by a black man?
Hey, not to mention with his white woman sitting ringside. You know, he wanted that.
Yeah.
Yo, what people don't remember is that fight against Jeffries, July 4th, 1910, that was the first time ever that women were allowed to sit ringside. And there was no undercard. The main event. That was the first time that women were allowed to sit ringside, and there was no undercard. All you got was the main event.
Main event, and in those days, all you had was the main event. I mean, that's all you had because those fights lasted that long. And we'll be here 3 weeks by the time they finish the other card. Then the main event. I mean, so you only had one fight. And that fight was a major fight. So that would have overshadowed anything else.
In other words, if they start fighting on Saturday, we can leave Sunday evening and catch the main event on Monday.
Now, I'd like to ask you two gentlemen something because I see you all are very knowledgeable about boxing, very knowledgeable.
Thanks so much.
Sugar Ray Robinson, near the end of his career, tried to make a fight with Archie Moore when Archie Moore was the light heavyweight champion.
Mm-hmm.
And the fight never came off because, you know, Sugar Ray was famous for dallying and messing around about the negotiations. Archie Moore got tired of waiting and went into Hollywood. Now, let me ask you, gentlemen, who do you think would have won that fight?
Whew. You know something? I don't have an answer. I don't have a clue. Because Archie Moore, the old mongoose, was like a magician, like, man, what that magician, that very famous magician in the ring, the old mongoose.
Merlin the magician?
Merlin or Mandrake or whatever you want to call it. That's how tricky Archie Moore was. And, you know, Ray Robinson would have probably tried to fight Archie Moore the way he fought Joey Maxim before he passed out in the heat. Because that's the only way Robinson knew how to fight.
Mm-hmm.
He would fight straight up and with a jab and back. But Archie Moore has so many tricks, man. You wouldn't know how to fight him, man. You know.
It's a good fight. I'm taking Ray Robinson in that one. I'm taking.
You know
Ray.
What, Dusty? Doc. You know why I would go with Archie in that one? Because there's the old adage, a good big man always beats a good little man.
That's right. That's right. We forgot that one. A good big man will always beat a good little man.
The question is, can a good big man beat a great little man?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, Archie Moore is great. The guy holds the record for the most knockouts.
Yeah.
That's true.
You know, he was a great fighter.
Yeah. Those guys in those days had over 200, 230 fights or something. Look at Willie Pep, who couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag. He had 265 fights, and you know how many people he knocked out? 65. And Willie
Pep, that means the guy couldn't knock his mother's hat off.
Exactly. And then you have an Archie Moore who had something like 130 knockouts. I said, oh my Lord, that's five boxing careers in the year 2012, man.
Now, funny you should say that, because I tell you, there are certain records I don't think will ever be eclipsed. I don't think Archie Moore's knockout record will be eclipsed.
Nope.
I don't think Will Chamberlain's 100 points in a game will be eclipsed.
No, never.
There's just certain records, man, you know. And Jim Brown has some
broken
records I don't think that them guys could have broke, man, you know.
Yeah, well, gentlemen, we're going to close here. Mr. Mitchell, it's been a pleasure, and we're going to get there. We want you back here with us Sunday. Come back on our show Sunday. We're going to once again let you know Doc Stanley Sports Up on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel Sports Up for the show.
Okay.
Friday, we've got a football special, but Mitch will be back here with us on Sunday. Dusty is always here, part of the posse. Leave you with three thoughts. Live your life today as if it's the same before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? That's a Dr. Martin Luther King quote, as well as, forgiveness is not an occasional act, but a permanent state of mind. That's Dr. King, as well as the ultimate measure of a man. It's not the way he stands in times of comfort and convenience, the way he stands in times of trial and controversy. Service to others is a richly paid for your room on earth, Muhammad Ali. And the Bible says the Son of Man came to serve and not be served. I said, be safe from the bottom of my heart. God bless you all and trust in God. Gentlemen, we're going to get back here together on Sunday. Larry Hardy is going to close us out. Dusty, say goodnight to everybody real quick.
God bless everybody. And Skeeter Mitchell, man, please stick around. You brought me back to my days when I was a teenager.
Nice, Dusty.
I used to fight five rounds. But no, it's good. It's good. It's good. Stick around.
It's been great, and I'll see you guys on Sunday.
Thanks a lot,
Skeeter. Okay, God bless.
Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest African-American sportscaster in the history of New York City radio, my friend Larry Hardesty.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.